Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP Section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Bob Keebler, and I'm here to talk about advanced planning strategies under 199 Cap A. Let's jump in and talk about some of the best ideas being discussed at the highest levels. Here's a quick list. Which businesses to aggregate and when? And how is aggregation different than grouping? What are the crack and pack strategies, and why have those gone by the wayside? Should you be making S selections and paying wages versus running your business through an LLC? How to create disregarded entities to create pure QBI? What are recognition events that extend the depreciation period? Resetting basis under 1014 at death, and while some types of basis increases reset for 199, others don't, such as 754 elections, trust planning, and estate administration. In the world of aggregation, the proposed Section 199 Cap A regulations allow taxpayers to aggregate their trades or businesses. Aggregated trades or businesses combined QBI, W-2 wages, and UBIA of qualified property prior to making calculations regarding the wage and capital limitations. Aggregation is permitted but not required, and aggregation may or may not be prudent and will need to be analyzed carefully on a case-by-case basis. Trades or businesses can be aggregated if the following six requirements are met. Each trade or business is itself a trade or business. The same person or groups of persons owns directly or indirectly 50% or more of each trade or business. For a trade or business owned by an S corporation, 50% or more of the issued and outstanding shares will be counted. And for a trade or business owned by a partnership, 50% or more of the capital or profits in the partnership will be counted. Such partnership must be held for the majority of the taxable year in which items attributable to each trade or business are included. All the items attributable to each trade or business are to be reported on returns within the same taxable year. And none of the trades or businesses is a specified service trade or business. And finally, the trades or businesses satisfy at least two of the following factors. All the trades or businesses must provide products and services that are the same or customarily offered together. The trades or businesses share facilities or share significant centralized business elements. And the trades or businesses are operated in coordination with or reliance upon other businesses in the same aggregated group. For example, John is a developer and has over 50 special purpose business entities. This includes numerous entities to hold rental real estate, a general contractor, and a management company. Recently, as a sidebar, the IRS reported that within a group, fees paid from a rental real estate entity to a management rental entity, the normal 6 or 10% monthly fee, would not be eligible for the QBI deduction. So the IRS is saying that if I paid an outside person to manage my apartment building, the outside person's income would be eligible for the QBI deduction. But if I'm paying that to myself, my own internal management company would not be eligible. Now, back to the point. In the past, how the enterprise's activities were allocated across these pass-through entities was irrelevant because the reporting was aggregated. However, under Section 199 Cap A, all of these calculations are done on an entity-by-entity basis. This is very important because some entities will pass the wage and capital test and some will not. You could be looking at a situation where you have two apartment buildings where one passes and one doesn't, but by merging them together, you maximize your aggregation election and maximize your 199 Cap A deduction. So very important to understand this. Now, there could be other situations where doing aggregation actually reduces your deduction. There is no way to calculate this other than conceptually. You have to just get it all in an Excel spreadsheet and run through it and determine exactly where you end up. So the key to all this is getting it down on an Excel spreadsheet. I do not think the conceptual tax law concepts are that difficult. I think the difficult concepts come into play when you have 50 or 100 entities and you have to look at them across many lines. So we talked about a trucking business in some of my examples, and in that trucking business, it actually became wise not to aggregate because aggregation would hurt you. You would receive less 199 Cap A deduction. Let's jump over to crack and pack. Now, when 199 was enacted, a number of commentators suggested that SSTBs could separate out non-service components of the SSTB, like administrative functions, into another business and qualify income from the separated business for Section 199 Cap A. 1.199 Cap A hyphen 5 effectively blocks this strategy. What they did here is they said that if you have overlapping ownership or overlapping sales of products, that you're not going to be able to use the 199 Cap A crack and pack strategy. So that's something that you want to take a good look at in the regs. It's all laid out very easily in the regs. You should be able to put your mind around that pretty quickly. But the idea that a dentist could spin her administrative help into some type of other entity and have them do the billing and pick up QBI on that, that idea is done. We just simply can't do that. Now, one very interesting and powerful idea has been to switch from a LLC over to S-Corp to pay the owner's wages. Let's think about how this would work. If I was in a non-specified service business, but I couldn't pass the wage and capital test because I'm in an LLC and an LLC doesn't pay the owners any wages, then what we would do is we would jump over to an S-Corp and have the S-Corp make the payments. So we would have the S-Corp make the payments, those would become wages, and now we're in a much better spot. Now, the other nice thing about an S-Corp is you're not paying your 3.8% tax on your entire earnings. Sometimes for a lower income person, maybe they make in their S-Corp, they make $125,000, but they only draw a salary of $70,000. They only pay Social Security on the first $70,000. So keep in mind, those are two reasons to look at an S-Corp, but the ideal wage to overall income ratio, if I knew I was going to make $1 million, I would want to pay myself a wage of $285,700, and the rest I would take out as QBI. That would get me algebraically to the exact right ratio. Now, keep in mind, you can also use disregarded entities to create pure QBI, because if you have somebody that's going to definitely be under $315,000 of income, what you want is pure QBI, meaning no wages coming out of it. So if I earned $300,000 in a S corporation, we would have to do what? We'd have to take out maybe $100,000 or $150,000 of wages. If I made $300,000 in a LLC that I owned 100% of, we wouldn't have to take out any wages whatsoever. Okay, even if I owned less, it really wouldn't matter. 100% isn't necessarily that critical. Now remember, in rental real estate, once rental real estate gets older, it's going to be harder to pass the capital test because of the fading basis issue. So you want to keep in mind, you're always going to be looking for an opportunity to transfer real estate to children or to trust for children or grandchildren. The IRS did throw a couple of roadblocks in here because the proposed regulations preclude the formation of separate trusts for a significant income tax benefit if there is not a significant non-tax benefit of creating the separate trust. So we absolutely have to remember that. That becomes very critical. And there are regulations both under 1.643 parens F parens 1, and there are also new 1.199 Cap A regulations, both addressing this multiple trust rule. So before you start setting up those trusts, you really want to take a good look at those trusts and see how they're going to help you. Now, my final point is, for estates under administration, it is very important for the lawyer and CPA working on the administration of those estates to work closely with the executor in the first year or two here, because we really need, above all else, we need to understand exactly how 199 Cap A is going to work. Let's talk about one of the more significant problems here before we go further. The proposed regulations provide that a 754 basis adjustment is not treated as qualified property. However, a 1014 nice pure basis adjustment would be counting and calculating UBIA. So let me lay this out next to each other. Scenario one, I own 100% of a disregarded entity. So we disregard the entity, I die, there's a nice clean step up in basis for all purposes, including 199 Cap A. Case two, I own 99% of that entity and 1% is owned, split up among our four children. If that's the case, then what you get into is you're going to be able to make a 754 election, but that 754 election is not going to work for purposes of 199 Cap A. It will work for every other purpose under the code. It just won't work for 199 Cap A. So when you have special partnership basis adjustments under 734B or 743B, you can't use a 754 election. So you're not allowed to use a 754 election. So unadjusted basis immediately after acquisition. What they're basically saying is if you owned it outright, you'd get a complete step up. If you own it through an entity, unless it's a 100% disregarded entity, you're not going to get a nice clean step up. This is a really, really big deal. Now, Dream and Estate Administration, very important to keep in mind that you want to be measuring whether or not you're going to be able to take advantage of the 199 Cap A deduction. Sometimes it's going to be better for an estate or trust to push D&I out to the beneficiaries where they may be able to avail themselves of that deduction. So that may be a very good strategy. Well, we've certainly covered a lot of ground today. On behalf of the PFP section, this has been Bob Keebler. If you enjoyed this podcast, we highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website to access more on this topic. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you more about how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit aicpa.org/PFP. And check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.